Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. Without any introduction, my name is Don Allen. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you this afternoon, or evening, I should say?
This evening, can't complain, shouldn't complain. We could be in, West Africa, the Ukraine, Gaza, or Ferguson, Missouri. I mean, we are in Minneapolis where we made history here. Yeah, it's a negative history, but biggest shootout, most people shot in a single incident in a single location. We didn't even have that happen when we were a frontier town, huh? But anyways, we'll be talking about that later on tonight, too.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. A lot of people don't realize that, and that's pretty serious. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, Mr. Edwards. And just
I understand
locally,
you have a copy of the president's most recent reflections on the deaths in, I notice I say deaths because apparently another African-American was shot and possibly killed last night outside of Ferguson, Missouri, which is a suburb St. Louis County, just on the edge of St. Louis. By the way, phone lines are open for anybody from St. Louis or from Ferguson, Missouri, to talk to us about this tragedy. Michael Brown, young African-American, getting ready to enter college. I understand he was looking also at a football scholarship. Good-sized young man. But anyways, what did the president have to say this time?
Let me get back up to it because there's one more thing that just came through the wire that I was looking at. So let me just scroll right back up there. Sorry about that. It's a statement by the president on what he says, the passing of Michael Brown. Is the title of the official release from the White House, the passing of Michael Brown. The death of Michael Brown is heartbreaking, and Michelle and I send our deepest condolences to his family, his community, at this very difficult time. As Attorney General Eric Holder has indicated, the Department of Justice is investigating the situation along with local officials, and they will continue to direct resources to the case as needed. I know the events of the past few days have prompted strong passions, but as details unfold, I urge everyone in Ferguson, Missouri, and across the country to remember this young man through reflection and understanding. We should comfort each other and talk with one another in a way that heals, not in a way that wounds. Along with our prayers, that's what Michelle and his family, that's what Michael and his family and our broader American community deserve. President Barack Obama.
Okay, all right. I mean, that's appreciate that by the president. Only problem is that this is becoming kind of commonplace. I understand KLAC in Los Angeles reporting a mentally challenged young African-American gunned down by the police earlier this morning. And we had a shooting of a young African-American early last week at a Walmart and somewhere in Lima, Ohio, or somewhere like that. We're just kind of target practice, aren't we, for the gendarmes?
Yes, we are. The LAPD shoots, kills black man during investigative stop. The man with disabilities, it was unwarranted, reported by KTLA. He was shot at 8:20 last night. And then we have a mentally ill man that was brutally beaten. And I have his picture posted on the Facebook page there, Mr. Edwards.
Okay. See it here in studio, calling it up. Okay.
Yeah.
That looks like it's just open season. Our young black men don't have to be ready to go to service and fight in somebody else's war. They got to fight in the war against them right here in the United States.
Exactly.
Phone lines are open, by the way, for people with any reflections on the death of Michael Brown. And we'll try to garner from our computers the names of the other victims, five or six. Incident in Miami yesterday, disturbances there, a white police officer reinstated after a questionable shooting death of a young African-American in Miami. It looks like we could go basically any medium-sized town, small town, county, or whatever in America, and young African-Americans are being gunned down.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the war on terror.
Yeah, the war on our own, right here in our on our land, you know.
Yeah,
Israel versus
that's
Palestine.
The war,
don't
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow,
so
I'm telling you.
Ms. Edwards, you know, I was going to the video yesterday, and I found something that could have been recorded yesterday.
Okay.
And I think we just need to play it without, and I'll introduce it after we play it. But, you know, this is relevant to what's going on in America, especially as black Americans are perceived and their identity and things like that. And I just want to go ahead and play this because it is relevant and it could have been recorded yesterday.
Okay.
I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I know, as Malcolm X once put it, it's the most segregated hour in American life is high noon on Sunday. That says a great deal for me about a Christian nation. It means I can't afford to trust most white Christians and certainly cannot trust the Christian church. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
That's James Baldwin, isn't it?
Yes, that's author James Baldwin. Breaking it down.
James Baldwin, my man. Yes, sir. Yeah. A dynamic speaker, a man of the 1960s, definitely a beautiful and great author, lecturer, orator, and et cetera. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, he was on point on that, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was.
I think that speech was probably around 1967, 68.
Yeah. On the
Here we are show. Almost 50 years later, nothing's changed.
Yeah, nothing. Not one damn thing.
Yeah, James Baldwin, my man. Yeah, well, you know, the other piece, Don, is that, as we said at the top of the program, telephone lines are open. We'll do a little update. We had 9 individuals shot. See, a lot of people thought it was just all blacks because it was at a black club, and they showed black folk, you know, running and walking and in dazed and et cetera. But, you know, actually it was 7 blacks, 1 white, and 1 young Asian lady, beautiful young Asian girl, who may be permanently paralyzed. We have one young African-American lady who, young sister, who I'm afraid is going to be paralyzed. They just took the trachea out of her throat earlier today. All innocent victims, if you will. But I haven't, you know, I was waiting, Alan, and I thought maybe you would tell me that we had a press conference with our leaders that had time to break away from J.D. Hoyts and big stakes. And
I was going to ask you, have you heard of a press conference being called with our black leaders, or for that matter, has any of the local leadership even made an official statement or visited these people in the hospital? You know, the NAACP?
I don't think so. I'm in a meeting yesterday morning with DJ Smith of Mad Dads. He was saying that he was trying to find out some information. Now, of course, he is a police chaplain. He is also on the chief's oversight committee, which is odd because that meant that the chief was not providing the names of the victims to her oversight committee, which I couldn't quite understand what the thinking was there. The chief of police, Janae Harto, who did get back in time for a briefing, I guess, on Monday, and then she left again. She's in Arizona. She went down to Arizona. But anyway, she wasn't in the city over the weekend. The incident happened at allegedly about, I don't know, 12:45 or thereabouts on Saturday morning. Can't tell you how many shots were fired, but at least it had to be at least 13 to 14 shots. As I said, that 9 officially wounded. What brought this attention, though, was a Minnesota Viking, Lavelle Joseph, who had been signed as a free agent for $31.8 million from the New York Giants. Just a very nice young man. I think the mainstream media here, Mr. Allen, as I watch the events play out and were receiving intel and et cetera. I think they thought that the Viking players had been the bad guys. In fact, someone who appears to be connected with the police department initially put out that the Viking players had been in a fight and guns had been pulled, et cetera. That's totally incorrect, untrue. But I thought that when I saw Assistant Chief Clark at the press conference on Saturday afternoon that he would kind of clarify. Of course, the Vikings and the NFL made the city clarify the fact that Mr. Joseph was a innocent victim caught in the crossfire. It had nothing to do with any of the violence, as did the other eight human beings had nothing to do with the situation. Even the target of the attempted assassination actually was sitting, you know, enjoying himself, partying with friends when the assassins opened fire.
Wow. Well, it's like the OK
Corral
down
there. So the Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Council have spent a lot of time in the last, 4 days,
mm-hmm.
talking in terms of how they wanted the lid kept on this. But what happened was when ESPN broke the news that a Viking football player had been shot and wounded. At that time, they didn't have all the necessary information. They said he'd been shot and wounded in a shootout which had left eight other people wounded. Well, you know, that's big-time shooting. I mean, that's Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying, Mr.
Allen? Gangland. Oh, yes.
Gangland, man. So the NFL made immediate inquiry through its Office of Security, and they apparently weren't satisfied with what was being told, and I think that by 9 o'clock Saturday morning, a representative of the league's Office of Security was here in Minneapolis to find out firsthand. Actually, the club should have not been occupied or visited by the Vikings. It's supposed to be on the don't attend list. It's had a long history of drug activity, et cetera. And, of course, you see how quickly they shut the club down and revoked the license. What was interesting, they revoked the license. They didn't even have to have a hearing.
No,
they didn't. Revoked his license. The owner is a Colombian national, if you will. So, you know, have a pretty good idea how the weapons were brought into the club, but I'm not at liberty to go into that. We'll do just like them folks do. But it is the injuries to at least three of the individuals, and particularly two young ladies, as we said, both of them may very well be paralyzed. As we said, one was shot through the neck, the other one was shot somewhere in the upper part of the torso with the bullet apparently ricocheting into the spinal area. So this was just not a good situation. I was saying the same thing about you to some of my associates on the West Coast. They said, well, will there be some kind of press conference? I said, well, I have to call my associate, Mr. Allen. He handles all of our heavy you know, computer stuff, and I said, you know, probably it's already been called. I guess leaders have been a little bit busy to get around to it.
So, Mr. Edwards, we have to look at this a little bit more deeper, okay? You have eight people in the biggest shootout in Minneapolis history. Shootout in Minneapolis, you have two females injured to the point of paralysis. And we don't have a campaign for a march, a rally, or nothing.
Well, here's what happened. I can't go into the details of the meeting that took place under the chairmanship of Dr. Peter Hayden, the father of state senator and assistant majority whip, Jeff Hayden of the Minnesota legislature. But V.J. Smith of Mad Dads, who has kind of been doing this, was asked to facilitate in the next 4 days or so at least a prayer vigil so that any of us and all of us can go out and at least say a prayer and pray for the recovery of these souls, if you will, all nine of them, including the Viking young Mr. Joseph. But that was something that was brought up in the Hayden Committee, if you will, suggested to Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith, as you know, remember, is on the Chiefs Oversight Committee. But they are saying that They haven't been able to get any information from the chief and from, what is his name, Sherman Patterson, who is the police department and the chief's personal liaison between the police department and the minority community. And family members I know have been trying to reach him in his office to have some data, if you will, some information on what has happened, what is the condition of the – we know the condition of Mr. Joseph. He suffered a wound to his calf. It looks like he'll be ready to play on when the Vikings open, I think, it's September 9th, but still he was shot and wounded, if you will. But we have not been able to get any information from the chief's office or from her special liaison, Sherman Patterson, Esquire, who was formerly held that position in the mayor's office under R.T. Ryback. So he has great experience, Mr. Allen, you know, knowing circumstances and facts. Now, the other problem we have over 50 witnesses, though I have to tell you, many of the folk didn't witness anything other than they were hugging that floor, okay, because the gunmen were firing a lot of shots. But we would expect that the liaison for the chief's office and the liaison for the mayor's office would have visited the hospital and et cetera. We understand as of this hour here in Minneapolis Central Standard Time that there's been nobody who from either one has gone up. We understand that a commander of the police department called over to ask about the condition of one young lady that had been shot, the one that was shot through the neck.
Hey, Mr. Epley, I'm getting some calls in, and I'm going to be off the air for a second here, but continue. We got some breaking news coming in.
All right, but tell them if they want to ask that question, they got to pick up the phone and call.
Exactly.
But anyways, as we talk about this, one of the things that was discussed in the closed meeting at Dr. Hayden's facility yesterday morning was that the homicide unit is so undermanned personnel-wise that a lot of their white detectives went on vacation and took off and et cetera. So you don't have enough personnel to handle these shootings. The assault unit is, which should have handled it because, you know, the shootings represent an assault until there's a DOA. But the assault unit only has four personnel in the office right now. And, of course, the strength of the police department here in Minneapolis is shrinking. We're now down to 770 sworn officers. Our approved strength should be about 960 officers. So we are almost 100, probably really about 110 officers under power or under strength, if you will. And so that's creating problems. The other thing that happened the other night, which has led to tensions that, you know, we're not really supposed to talk about, is that we didn't have any uniformed black police officers at the scene as over 100 people were, you know, inside the club and at least 50 people were detained. And there was no black uniformed officers anywhere to be found. The only black officers were two, interesting enough, the two investigators. The two lead investigators are black, African-American, if you will. And we chanced to observe them as they took care of their responsibilities and duties. But, it takes a lot of venting and et cetera to interview 50, 50, 51, 52, 53 people, if you will. And it takes time sometimes to talk to the victims. As we said, at least one of the victims just had tube removed from her throat. So, you know, that's a delicate situation. Another victim has multiple gun wounds. Another victim is close to paralysis. So then you have some others. And people were knocked down by the police. I have a witness's account of a young African-American woman who was trying to comply with a white female officer who was screaming and hollering and pointing a Glock at her. And was telling her to get out on the ground, you know, et cetera, and told her to stand up and then hit her in the head with a baton, if you will, knocking her to the floor. We had other African-Americans. I don't understand why you mace people who you see are injured. I just don't understand the theory of that, but maybe that's a police theory that has some validity, legal and procedurally to it. But I just don't understand how you got people standing in front of you, they're bloodied, some are shot, and you mace them. I mean, I don't understand that, but I imagine there's some explanation. Right now with the pressures that are going on in Missouri, I guess the Department of Justice probably doesn't have enough FBI agents to go out, and then they're looking for terrorists and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all the rest of them, so probably don't have enough personnel. But that's the situation this hour in what was the largest mass shooting in the history of this city since it was incorporated way back in 1850. So that's what the situation is at this hour. Let me see if my colleague, Mr. Allen, is back. He should be off those back channel calls that are coming in. Mr. Allen, are you back with us? He doesn't seem to be back with us. I don't know what kind of calls he is getting. But anyways, we assume that V.J. Smith will be going ahead with the memorial services or the vigil was recommended, and he agreed to coordinate that, and we think that hopefully it will happen in the next 4 or 5 days. In the meanwhile, we would certainly encourage our leadership to visit the victims, if you will, at the county hospital, MCHC, if you will, in downtown Minneapolis. I think that's kind of the least that we can do. Waiting for my co-host, Mr. Allen, to get back with me.
I am back.
All right, what the level of urgency did we have, Mr. Allen,
I asked them to call in, and if they don't call in, I will tell you after the show. So we'll see what happens.
They had some questions with respect to some event going on?
Yeah, they had some questions about this what's going on downtown, the shooting. I said, hey, you're welcome to call. Supplied the number to them, and they continue to badger for more information. I said, hey, I don't have any more information. You need to call into the
No. We're not providing any information. There are certain restrictions that I, as an observer for the Department of Justice, have agreed to. I mean, that's bottom line. But if they have some specific questions about the condition of the victims, as we said, 7 African-Americans, men and women, majority women, 1 Asian female, and 1 Caucasian male.
And we do have some callers holding, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's put the caller on. Put the caller through.
Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air, Mr. Mann. How are you, sir?
Oh, okay. I've caught a lot of your segment and really don't have anything to add to it, but there is news on the school board front. I'm in basically a dead heat with another candidate for nomination to the school board. You know, we're about 50 votes apart, and I'm planning to ask for a recount.
Okay.
Yeah, but under Minnesota law, you're within 100. You can ask for a recount. Who is the other individual that you're at a dead heat with?
Ira Jourdain.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right.
And you know, I mean, actually, if he goes, if he advances to the,
it'll be he and Don Samuels. It'll be he and Don Samuels in the general election, or what?
Don Samuels is going to be in the general election, and so is Iris Altamirano and Rebecca Gagnon.
Were running for a district seat, or were you running citywide?
Citywide.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Okay.
And so kind of the dead heat is for who's going to be
Well, we wish you the best on the recount. We hope that the election board gives you that recount. Obviously, Minnesota law allows you to have that recount, and so hopefully you'll be able to receive that. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mann. Anything else? Any questions on the shootings or anything?
On the shootings, I don't know. The attitude of the police and the political establishment is, you know, just really not at all surprising.
Killed in sales, et cetera. Only problem is there was one Caucasian and one Asian who were also gunned down, so that may not be too wise. Appreciate it, sir.
Okay. You bet.
Goodbye. Have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
Go right ahead, caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
How y'all doing tonight?
All right.
Real
how
good.
Are you, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Good, not too bad. It's becoming a bit redundant that we're talking about the way our young black men are being executed, sometimes hunted by police, the very people that are supposed to protect and, quote, serve us, our very communities. Particularly now when you look at here in North Minneapolis, you look at we have the $20 mayor who thinks that her ideal of canvassing the neighborhoods, she thinks that I guess that might strike the fear of God to some people. I guess she doesn't realize what her plan of action, her lack of their plan of action is a joke. And the police chief, both of them, is a joke. And I don't understand why none of our black leaders are calling for the jobs of the police chief or the mayor, or more importantly, lighting a fire under them to figure out what are we going to do to eradicate the curbing violence, okay, especially gun violence. Now, the only answer that they've come up with is putting more police officers on the streets. Okay, I'm okay with that. But isn't there something else that must go with that than just a plan of putting...
Well, certainly, because that's why we have the ATF, who have offices here in the Twin Cities, and the DEA and others. That's why we have the federal government. They should definitely be able to do something with that. I mean, that's an excellent observation and point, particularly in that we're, as black America, we're not in the gun manufacturing business. We don't manufacture the weapons, never have, you know, never been allowed to get into that end of the business. So we're not Smith & Wesson or Glock or any of those, Remington, entities like that. But it's a good question. One of the things that was said to me this afternoon in a private conversation was that our chief has been gone basically 25% of the time since she took office. That's a lot. Particularly given the problems that we have here, if you will. The mayor's been gone almost an equal amount. We kind of saw it here Saturday when they had the press conference. Again, Assistant Chief Clark, because that's what assistant chiefs are about. That's technically the number two person in the department. But it looks so weird, you know, to have the largest shooting ever in the history of your municipality, 9 people gunned down, if you will, and the chief does not get back to the city until a couple of days later, and then turns around and is gone again, if you will. Like I said, as we understand, is in Arizona. So it's obvious that there's not a lot of importance placed on the violence against communities of color, though I don't think anyone realized that one of the victims was a Caucasian, and, of course, one of the victims was also a young Asian woman.
Well, as soon as they find out that it's a white lady, they'll get on it.
Black. I don't know.
Yep.
Once they find out that one of the victims was white, they'll definitely get on it. And again, Mr. Edwards, I guess, my disappointment is at our community leaders. You know, we can have all the marches and you know, they've been peaceful, but when are we going to grab a camera, one of these news stations, and get before a mic and ask for some accountability, not only from our own people, but from the leaders and the mayor and the chief and those the powers that be. The one resource that they continue to gloss over is the fact that the community lacks jobs. You will continue to have high crime and areas where there are no money, okay, where there are low educated people. So not only do we need jobs, we need education. And the programs that these community leaders are spending the money that they are, the monies that have been allocated to them and that they are misappropriating and not giving to our young men, that's also because, you know, I never justify killing in any way. But these young men have no, they have no avenues. I mean, some of these young men, when they get out of schools, where do they go? Where's a clean park or a park for them to play not only just basketball, but how about some tennis or some golf or things of that nature? That's laughed at in our community. And so up until we get some real jobs, we're going to continue to see crime committed because these young men are looking for a way to support their families. So they will rob
Let me say on that point, sir, that's interesting, the timing elsewhere up and down that we had coordinated this, but you and I have not talked. I do not even necessarily know each other other than by the air. Today, this morning at a meeting in St. Paul with the staff of the governor, a African-American contractor by the name of Robbie Norman of Thor Construction indicated what he was prepared to do. He has kind of been in a pitched battle with Louis King of OIC and some others. Mr. Norman, I'm told by very reliable sources, is not comfortable with the promises that were made leading up to the beginning of construction on the People's Stadium, the Viking Stadium. And he kind of got pushed overboard, if you will, because people tried to make it appear that Thor Construction was going to do all the hiring and et cetera. So Thor is nothing but a subcontractor. The prime contractor is M.A. Mortensen, who Thor has a relationship with, but, you know, M.A. Mortensen cannot give them guarantees of 500,000 to 700,000 jobs in areas that are outside their discipline. So anyways, today, Mr. Norman came up with his plan and, in fact, questioned the leadership that I think you're making reference to. In the meeting, in the presence of the governor's chief of staff, see, they didn't think that we knew that I knew that here, and by extension, our program knows it. And it got kind of testy in there when he indicated that he had the ability to go in his own direction. There were things that he wanted to do. That supports, sir, what you just intimated, and that is that one of the great problems is the lack of jobs in both north, south Minneapolis, throughout the city of Minneapolis, in the suburbs for youngsters of color. I mean, I'm watching young black men who just got here from Chicago, for example, working, bussing dishes and et cetera, doing anything they can to be productive and et cetera. So that whole thing about they won't work, you know, and of course the job pays, you know, it's $7 an hour, I mean, but these young men are desperate. They're trying. They're looking towards, quote-unquote, the so-called big leaders to come forward. And, you know, you've called a couple times before. Others have called this program. And we can't even get the count from the Vikings stadium, from the Sports Facility Authority, on how many hours have actually been worked, how close are they to the so-called 32-34% of the workforce, quote-unquote, are going to be people of color. It's just a sham. And, you know, that leads to what it is that we see ourselves faced with. I mean, I'm looking at what's happening out here in the street. I'm looking at the petty misdemeanors and et cetera. I mean, people are doing so much shoplifting and stealing out of the grocery stores and et cetera. People aren't stealing for luxury anymore. They're stealing, man, just to eat,
for
to
necessity.
Feed their babies.
That's right. I'll say this, two quick points, and I'll hang up. Number one is that's why when I hear folks complaining about a part-time economy, I say that they aren't looking into the inner cities because you don't hear folks in the inner cities complaining about a part-time job because a part-time job, hence the word, the operative word being job. It doesn't matter if it's part-time, the operative word being job. I have via Twitter asked the mayor, what was she going to do about the rising high crime and what about jobs? And, of course, my tweets went unanswered, and so I personally emailed her, and, of course, those emails have gone unanswered, too.
Mm.
So, again, when you have a regular citizen like myself asking the mayor, what is your ideas, what's your plan of action to help my community, I'm blatantly ignored. So, you know, I think what we have to do, again, is I'm going to continue to fight the good fight, and I'm going to continue to stay on this mayor, this terrible $20 mayor, and the terrible chief, who actually is probably chief in name only, until they do something about eradicating crime and bringing jobs to our community, because we are not starving to eradicate crimes, although that is a point. We are more starving, literally, because we can't feed our families.
Yes, sir. The point well made. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, take care. Profound observation. By the way, Mr. Allen, in talking to his associates in Missouri today, you know, that's one of the underlying currents in Ferguson, Missouri, as we speak. A town of 67% African Americans. Nobody, if you notice, the white media does not talk about what the unemployment rate is amongst young African Americans, 15 to, let's say, 20. And the reason is it's damn near consistent with the population. You know what I'm saying? And so the previous caller's observation question, I think, is on point. But again, let's get that number out. You know, we had some people called in already. Phone lines are open. If we have any of our listeners in Missouri, we'd like to get your observations about what's happening in Ferguson. We've had two nights of uprisings, if you will. May very well have a third one tonight. Al Sharpton and others, I think Al Sharpton already is in Ferguson / St. Louis. Tell me Jesse Jackson is on his way down from Chicago. I talked to some associates in Kansas City. They maintain that even leadership in Kansas City is on its way into Ferguson, St. Louis / area, because this thing is so volatile. They say that some of the white mayors in some of the white towns there in St. Louis County, where Ferguson and, of course, the city of St. Louis is located, is asking the governor of the state to consider activating the National Guard, if you will, to protect, you know, white folks and property. Here's the problem, though. Have you noticed, Mr. Allen, the rather large number of white citizens that have been marching with blacks there in Ferguson?
Mm-hmm. I've seen some pictures online and some
yeah,
other...
Yeah, well, that's a fact. That, a lot of white citizens have come out. And, we said before, Ferguson is 67% African-American. But you cannot understand the politics because you look at the mayor, he's white. In fact, he's going to be on tomorrow morning talking in terms of how they're going to bring order. By the way, I wonder how people are thinking about the refusal, though Missouri law says that the police officer is to be identified within no less than 72 hours after they have been involved in an officer-involved shooting. And the Ferguson Police Department and the St. Louis County Police chief, which is the equivalent to a sheriff, have allowed the Ferguson Police Department to refuse to reveal the name of the white officer.
Yeah, it's been wrong. I know the ACLU filed a Sunshine Act or law to get the name of this particular officer, and I don't know how that's going, but that was just on CNN later this afternoon. So hopefully they do get the name of that officer and figure out what the hell is going on with that. So,
all right. Let me say this also, because this is a part of our website, our national website, my website, and that is we immediately took a look at the composition of the police department in Ferguson. Police department is 53 officers, in which three are black. I saw two of the three. I've never seen the third one yet. Is a total of 9%. 67% is the black population. 9% is the black presence within the police department. But do you know what? That's better than Minneapolis. Did you know that?
Oh yeah.
Black officers in this department are 6%. Mm. See, they try to fool you with that 18%, but that's for quote unquote all minorities, including white females. So
and we have
Ferguson. All right, get the caller in.
Okay, caller, you're live on the air.
Yes, am I alive?
Yes, you are, sir.
Yes, you are.
Oh, yes, I will identify myself as Mr. M. I'm a caller every now and then to your station. I love what you guys do, and I wanted to just chime in a little bit, if I could, on the St. Louis situation.
Please do, sir.
You know, I happen to have a good friend in St. Louis, and I happen to call them. And the reason I called them was really out of concern, because some of the things I saw on the news media were very concerning. I mean, the rioting, the, you know, I mean, actually I felt like, never forget sitting on my grandmother's knee back in the, you know, late 50s, early 60s. My grandmother was from Alabama.
Okay.
And we were looking at the dogs, and we were looking at the, you know, the Bull Connors era and that, and my grandmother said, you know what, I hope you never grow up and see this again. I hope your kids don't sit at the TV like we are and see this. And you know what? I saw that. And so I called St. Louis. I called my friend, and she said, you know what? It's just totally out of control here. The things you see on TV don't even begin
to
tell you what's really going on. I said, people are scared to leave their doors. People are scared to go to work. I mean, the city is shut down. I mean, the magnitude of what she told me and living there and what I see on the news tells you, you know, people are just fed up. I mean, come on. We've pushed this agenda of equality and pushed this. Well, let's do it. You know, I mean, the lip service point is people get fed up. And certainly I don't think that violence and that's not the way to solve anything. You know, violence.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely correct. And the family of the deceased, young 18-year-old Michael Brown, has called for peace and tranquility. But see, our people can always, it's part of our Christian upbringing, we can always be counted on to do that.
Yeah,
it's just too bad that that doesn't reside in some other segments of the society, if you know what I mean.
Well, you know, you go to Christian upbringing. I mean, from what the book that I read says, eye for an eye.
Yes, it is, doesn't it? Yeah, that's what it says, doesn't it? Oops. Yeah. Let me say the same thing. I talk with some associates of mine in my hometown of Kansas City, and they were saying exactly the same thing, that it is almost a state of siege. I had just said before we took your call that the governor of Missouri, sitting there in Jeff City, has been under pressure by executives, mayors, and et cetera, in St. Louis County, because there's also an additional problem. You know, right across the river from, you know, St. Louis and Ferguson are some of the toughest black folks in the country, and that's in Lovejoy, Illinois / East St. Louis. And they got the Illinois State Highway Patrol and the Missouri State Patrol on the other side of the bridge. They out there because them brothers is coming across the bridge. They've been coming across the bridge for the last number of weeks. And those all-white communities in and around both St. Louis and East St. Louis are very nervous. But on the other hand, as I said, caller to my associate, Mr. Allen, is that, I don't know, I saw a lot of angry white folks out there marching with them black folks, and I just think a lot of people just getting fed up, man. Because they just use another target practice.
Well, and that's why they have a bigger problem than they think they do, because, see, it wasn't, when I saw some of the pictures that I saw, it wasn't only black folks.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, there were outraged by
that's the genesis of the point both of us were making. I was surprised, I have to tell you. I mean, I know that state and that part of the country. I was surprised, and I told my colleague at our production meeting, I was surprised at the number, proportionally, the number of white citizens, young and old, who were marching both of those nights, okay, particularly in the daytime activities. And I said, well, people kind of get fed up.
Those pictures were very telling, and Mr. Edwards, why it was, and one of the pictures that I saw that was so telling was you saw a very mixed crowd, an irate crowd confronting the police.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I really believe, because there was a representative number of white folks there, the police just stood there stoically.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
They didn't raise anything. They didn't say anything. They stood there stoically.
Yes, they did.
They got a problem. They got a problem on their hands.
I think you're right, and I don't know what the situation is. I'll be making a call after we go off the air to our sources in St. Louis and people that also have the necessary political contacts in Jeff City, because there's something very uneasy. One of the questions, let me get your thinking, sir. This decision, which actually right now is in violation of Missouri law, to not name the police officer, I wonder what the history of this cop is.
Well, you know, what that does is then that brings in the whole area of deception. You're already showing you have something to hide. You know, mm-hmm. In these type of situations, transparency is the best thing you can do. We need to see what happened here. We need to say this is the individual. This individual is suspended. He's off duty while we investigate. You know,
absolutely.
They need to show something proactive, you know, that they're doing something about it, because this was an unarmed individual. I mean, there's nothing that says this individual was breaking the law, causing a commotion, and that he was unarmed. And
yes.
then there's other accounts that say his hands were raised in the air when he was shot, and he was shot multiple times.
Including a man who was within 2 feet or 3 feet, who himself is lucky he wasn't shot and killed. Yeah, that's. I mean,
so
I've been watching for the last couple of days the major media try to put the right narrative. But let me tell you the narrative in closing that's at play here, and it'll be in my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Reporter next week.
I'll look forward to it.
We have the same narrative that we have become used to, almost a tradition. The chief of the department comes out and says, you know, we want to be transparent. In this case, the chief of the county police comes out and says the same BS, and that we'll be impartial and et cetera. But, you know, what we're concerned about is the rioting and the uprisings and et cetera. And then here comes the FBI, who says that we've been ordered in. And then you got the Department of Justice, who said, you know, we're waiting for the report. And the only problem with that narrative, there's never anybody indicted or convicted or sentenced.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I don't know, maybe somebody should tell Attorney General Holder, who I have great, great respect for, and the president maybe, that maybe you need to change up the narrative, okay? That basically the St. Louis County police will do a whitewash on behalf of their buddies in Ferguson, and what they'll basically suggest that maybe the family should file a civil suit, but you know, no white police officer is going to jail.
Yeah, well, you know, I hate to say, you know, this, but really what we see, and is really what we're saying, is that this system is about protecting and continuing a status quo that continues to perpetuate a lifestyle and continues to perpetuate the things that keep certain people down and certain people up, and to make this a jailbreak for you to get through, to make yourself a productive citizen, have a family, to have an economic viability. And this whole thing is to protect that.
Yes,
so
it is.
So that we're not allowed to participate in that.
That's right.
Fairly, you know, it should be the best man should win in any endeavor. In any
mm-hmm.
endeavor, the best man should win.
Right.
And this is
all right, Jim, we appreciate your calls, and we'll all keep our eye on what's going on across the country and across the world,
I'll keep my eye
certainly
on
here in our own frontier city. Thank you.
Take care.
We have another call.
Caller, go ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay, I think he just wants to be in the queue. Let me get this other one from Rome, Italy. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show.
Yeah, hi.
We're on live.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Good. This is Dr. Jack Shepard. Anyways, I lost my primary by 1,000 votes for the United States Senate, so
sure.
I decided to run as a write-in candidate.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason
okay.
is the gridlock, the problems we're having in the Congress, that's why there's really no job programs or things to help the inner city, to help the communities, because they can't decide on barely anything. If they were functional and making programs that would help hire minorities, help the inner city, stimulate jobs, stimulate business, but they're not even working on the basics. They can't even close our borders. I mean, our borders are a welcome wagon. Anybody can come in the border, they get more money, more support, more housing than anybody who grew up in North Minneapolis and things like that. I just don't understand. They're giving money to people who just can swim across that river, and the welcome wagon, everything they want, they get. But the people in the inner city, they get nothing. And another thing is you don't mention the Hennepin County prosecutor. See, this man, Mr. Freeman, he has the highest black-to-white ratio of arrests for marijuana and convictions and sending to prison of any county in Minnesota, and the fifth highest county ratio of disparity.
In the United
black
States, yes, yes, you've shared it with us. We appreciate it.
So,
all right.
Yeah, what I want to do, we have beautiful person, and his name is Bobby Joe Champion, and he's not running for re-election this cycle. And Mr. Freeman isn't running against anybody. And if people want, they can write his name down under Hennepin County Prosecuting Attorney, and that's a stepping stone to the United States Senate. And he could spend 10 years or 20 years in the Minnesota Senate doing a beautiful job for the community. But this person is so good, so talented, and so well-liked that if he would win this Hennepin County prosecutor, like Amy Klobuchar, like Norman Coleman, he in 4 years or 6 years could be in line for being being the first black U.S. senator from Minnesota. You know, so I'm running as a write-in candidate.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right, Mr. Shepard, we appreciate it. Thank you for calling us from Rome, Italy. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck, guys.
Thank you. Mr. Woods, go ahead. You're live on the air.
Yes. I just tuned into the program. You know, this situation is going on here, and also the shooting of that young brother. You know, people, we keep relying on these politicians and these so-called black leaders, and they're selling us out. This is really going to be up to the people. When the people get together and say, hey, enough of this crap is enough, and show up. And I don't agree with, I'm from the school of thought that I don't agree with, please, no violence. I'm not advocating violence, but more needs to be there than just some lip service and people marching. If people get together and go as a force, okay, and confront these people and put them on Front Street, Obama, that's my guy. I voted for him. But this is an issue that Obama should be dealing with. Okay, and calling the right people in, not to attack us, but to really rescue it, because it's an assault. Okay, what's happening right now, the black man is really on blast. They really don't care about us. And
we're
so
an endangered
when
species. Yeah. We're an endangered species. Yeah.
They really don't care about us, and that's what they're saying, that they don't really care. And they're steady, you know, putting us in a position where we are powerless. So, and I hate that brother got shot, but people need to wake up, and the very people that we're putting all our trust in are selling us out, and they're doing it on a daily basis, and they're steady saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and they do nothing. They're bought and paid for until we come to the understanding that, yo, we need some people that's going to be for us rather than just saying, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, these marches and all that. We need to go to another level to get some results here. And people need to hear. I don't think that people really know about Minnesota and all this craziness that's going on here. And blacks are, I mean, we're killing each other. The police is assaulting us. It's a really bad time for us. And I just wanted to make that comment.
All right, thank you, sir. Okay, all right. Mr. Allen, any other calls?
No.
Phone lines open. Give that number one more time, because we're going to win to the 30, or we're going after that. How far are we going?
We're going to the 30, but if we need to go further, that's fine too. So that number 3-4.
Yeah, getting a lot of calls in. Okay, we have to give that number out again. We still got about 7 minutes.
347
426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. But, Mr. Edwards, you know, there was a report, a study, I should say, done. It's called the Operation Ghetto Storm. I posted it in the chat room. It's by the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. It was done in 2000. It was done in, actually published February 2013. Black man is killed in every, in 28, a black man is killed in the U.S. every 28 hours by police. So what we're seeing here, and this is from a 2012 study by the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement called Operation Ghetto Storm. Again, I posted the link on our chat room. And it says that we're only hearing basically a fraction of who is getting gunned down. And
towns,
you know, this is just a small, the tip of the needle. There are more people. If this report that did it, it looks like I'm actually just downloaded a report. It's quite a few hundred pages. And you look at it and you see the state, especially the southern states, where the information was available and some information was and some information was not. But if every 28 hours a black man is killed by police, we're hearing, you know, we're only hearing, what, two or three out of the hundreds that we should be knowing about? And
that's right.
Media,
that's right.
The media is really suppressing this, from Fox all the way down to
CNN, the rest of them, the big networks, CBS, NBC, absolutely, absolutely. I saw a video last night of a California, white California highway patrolman in the middle of the freeway beating an African-American woman almost to death. I mean, he was punching her so hard that, you know, you'd have wished that he'd have been put in the ring with Joe Frazier or somebody. I mean, he was pounding her. He wasn't not only pounding, he was punching her, beat her into unconsciousness, okay? And I said, wow, what could this African-American woman do in the middle of the freeway, okay? Now, this is not to be confused with the shooting and killing of a handicapped African-American male earlier today in Los Angeles. So what Mr. Woods, is that his name, what he said is absolutely on point. What the document that you found from February of 2013, think about that, February 2013. So there was a whole year and a half for folks to leadership and others to get something together. We really haven't even heard about that. There hadn't even been a discussion about that.
No, and this is where some of our, you know, our well, they don't call them community leaders or activists. They call them freelancers in this article. When the cameras come out, the freelancers are there. And they said, and this it's on a website, as folks that are listening, it's called Occupy.com, not to be mistaken with any of those Occupy groups, because it's not affiliated with any of them. This is a research, academic research website.
Oh, academic research. Okay, gotcha.
And they went in detail, and everything that they have on this site, Mr. Edwards, they are backing up with the actual facts, the police reports, I mean, the whole nine yards. And if you look at it, you know, any one of us could fall victim to a police shooting or killing, because over 98% in this report of the African-Americans who have been killed, that's 28 killed by police, every 28 hours a black man
every,
is killed.
Yeah, one every 28 hours.
28 hours,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So they say explicitly that over 98% of them could possibly be, well, they're innocent until proven guilty, but what they're saying is these folks are innocent. They either got out of the car wrong, made a wrong hand gesture, cussed the police officer out, they beat them until they had brain damage and died. I mean, a variety, not just shooting. You know, this is just, you know, beatings, tasings, and they have heart attacks. And we've seen that here, the YMCA downtown Minneapolis.
A young man by the name of Smith, the city civil rights director, Velma Corbell, helped to cover that up. They did lose a tremendous amount of money in a lawsuit brought by his heirs, his mother, and et cetera. We were very happy. Mr. Allen and I, by the way, asked in a letter to the director of the civil rights department, Velma Corbell, who was still there, and at that time Mayor R.T. Ryback, the great white liberal, was the mayor. We asked in writing for her department to open a civil rights investigation under color of law, and she refused. And then the city lost a, what was it, $3 million, $4 million lawsuit in his death.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, just want to the listening audience, it's going to be an interesting article, Star Tribune, this weekend, from what I'm understanding, Mr. Allen, which talks about the decision, the political decision to not hire any African-American police officers and firefighters.
That's going to be
Star
a tough
Tribune
one.
Apparently got set up, but maybe it's because of the new owner, Glenn Taylor, the owner of the Timberwolves and the Lynx, but that story will raise some interesting questions about the suppressing of information, which under color of law here in the state of Minnesota was supposed to be made available. We did print the information in the Spokesman Recorder in our column, and we've talked about it on this program over the last 3 weeks, but the Star Tribune, very aggravated. So anyways, that'll be something folks may want to, for those folks that maintain they don't know what's going on or they can't believe what it is we're saying and how do we get away with these wild statements and et cetera. Everything we talk about is documented.
Yeah.
But Mr. Allen, looks like we're about ready to wrap it up. Appreciate the callers. We appreciate the attention. And I'll call you back offline because I'm interested about what kind of questions were being asked about the shooting of 9 people here in this city last Saturday morning. And in which the mayor and others have not even taken the time to visit the wounded individuals, at least 2 of whom will probably be partially or fully paralyzed as an outgrowth of being shot, both females.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, I'd like to leave everybody again with some James Baldwin. It could have been recorded yesterday.
Woo!
I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I know, as Malcolm X once put it, it's the most segregated hour in American life is high noon on Sunday. And so it's a great deal for me about a Christian nation. It means I can't afford to trust most white Christians and certainly cannot trust the Christian church. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.